Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the ACE CPT exam. My name is Eddie Lester, here to take you through chapter 10, specifically the PowerPoint lecture. So let's go ahead and jump on in with slide number one and talk about how chapter 10 really focuses on creating resistance training programs. And when we think about resistance training programs, this is going to be our primary objective when we think of working with our clients. You know, a lot of people go to the gym, they could do cardio on their own, they could even do some moderate flexibility on their own, but really when it comes down to resistance training, this is where personal trainers are primarily expected to be creative and also create programs that are effective for their clients. So let's move over to slide number two and talk more about resistance training. Specifically, what is resistance training consist of? Well, it consists of what are called reps. Repetitions. And a repetition is made up of a concentric action, an isometric action, and an eccentric contraction. We want you to know what these are for the test, absolutely. One of the kinesiology sort of elements of this test definitely shows up around concentric, eccentric, and isometric. So what is a concentric action? It is a muscle action in which the muscle shortens. Okay, muscle shortens, meaning the muscle fibers are pulling towards each other and shortening the muscle or decreasing the angle of a joint typically. Eccentric muscle actions is where it is a contraction, but the muscle is lengthening. So there's developed tension, but you would kind of consider it the descending portion of the rep or the lengthening of a muscle as it contracts or lengthens. Yeah, I guess I said that twice. But isometric is going to be a muscular contraction in which the muscle does not change in length. Okay, so this is you're basically if you were holding a push-up at halfway down, that is an isometric contraction. The muscle length isn't changing, but the muscle is contracting, providing force, just non-moving, we'll say. All right, so that is what resistance training is made up of, repetitions, which are concentric, isometric, and eccentric muscle actions. All right, so what are some of the benefits of resistance training? Definitely huge benefits to resistance training, especially in my opinion, around hormonal effects. You know, really assists the body with optimizing hormones, sex hormones, as well as hormones that assist in body fat loss and muscle gain and really just overall health. But improve physical capacity, that's the ability to perform work or exercise. Basically benefit the body's physical appearance and body composition. An increase in muscle mass of around 1.4 kilograms in 10 weeks is very possible. As well as reducing body fat weight by 1.8 kilograms in 10 weeks. Those are just some general norms that study showed, but those can definitely vary significantly. I would typically maximum put muscle gain around maybe 1 pound a week maximum, especially when you're first starting out, and then reducing body fat. I've seen as much as 10 pounds in a week be lost. So. As opposed to going with kilograms, I gave you a number in pounds, but those definitely vary depending on every, we'll say, element that goes in that person's life. Are they sleeping well? Are they eating well? Are they exercising? And what is their stress or work-life balance like? All right, metabolic function, definitely some benefits there. Raise resting metabolic rate, meaning that the more muscle you have, the more calories that are burned daily to sustain that muscle. So that's great. Injury risk and disease prevention definitely prevents disease and decreases the likelihood of injury. That's done through increase in bone mineral density, meaning stronger bones. That also decreases the risk of osteoporosis, as well as metabolic syndrome and depression. So there's some positive hormonal benefits around mood, definitely, that fight depression. Also lowers blood pressure. Lowering blood pressure is very healthy for most, and improved lipid profile, meaning cholesterol and triglyceride levels typically normalize and or become healthier, lower. All right, so moving on to the next slide, slide number three, talking about the physiological adaptations of resistance training. So what are some of the influencing factors physiologically, short-term and long-term? Influencing factors are going to be hormonal levels, definitely increase in testosterone and growth hormone, which is very healthy in both males and females. to a certain extent. Well, naturally, we'll say. Sex and age are definitely going to not necessarily be affected, but they will. Those are factors that can influence the amount of resistance training that you can do and in your recovery as well. The muscle fiber type, you can increase, we'll say, type 2 muscle fibers by lifting heavier, or you can increase type 1 muscle fibers by focusing on endurance-based work. And then muscle length relative to the bone, meaning you can increase flexibility, sometimes decrease flexibility. Limb length, those are factors that can affect the amount or type of resistance training that you can do, such as limb length. Longer levers make it difficult to lift heavier weights sometimes. And then the tendon insertion point does matter, as far as every person is different, and that can affect the type of resistance training that you can perform safely. All right, so moving on to slide number 4 and talking about muscular relationships. So we're going to talk specifically about muscular strength and about muscular hypertrophy. So, muscular power consists of muscular strength and movement speed. We definitely want you to know that. When you think about producing power, you also obviously want to produce a lot of force when you produce power, but you also want to have that movement speed be as high as possible in order to optimize power, because pushing something really heavy, really slow is not that powerful. But moving something that's medium weight at a very high rate of speed, medium weight at a high rate of speed is very powerful. So, you want to increase the speed of movement, and that leads to increased power. We want you to know that for the test. Okay, so obviously not something that's 0 pounds or extremely light, because that wouldn't have a lot of power because there's not enough force, but mainly something that's too heavy doesn't allow for effective movement speed, therefore decreases power. All right. Muscular strength and hypertrophy affects the size and number of muscle fibers. Typically, that is increased. Hypertrophy literally means increase in muscle fiber size and sometimes number. Strength, when we think about muscular strength, we're really looking to improve the amount of weight we can lift with one repetition. So one repetition max, 1 RM is what that stands for. And really focusing on moving something with a ton of force, and we don't care about the speed. Just what is your one rep max? How heavy of something can you lift, depending on the lift that you're doing or the exercise that you're doing? And then endurance. Endurance is basically increasing the number of repetitions that can be performed within a given submaximal resistance, in a sense of how many reps can you do at a certain weight, increasing the amount of reps that you can perform at a given weight is an increase in endurance. All right, moving on to the next slide, slide number 5. Slide number 5, thank you. The variables for training. So training variables associated with program design, this is going to be important. This is where you're going to understand how to put a program together. Okay, and the first step to putting a program together is determining the needs of the client. And basically, what you do that through a needs assessment, meaning the entire assessment process will help you determine the needs of that client, specifically health-related assessments, skill-related assessments, postural assessments, strength assessments, power assessments even, and flexibility assessments. All that sort of stuff goes into what the goal of the client is. All of that really goes into the beginning part to creating a program, because you need to have a very specific goal in mind, and you need to know the current state of that client's fitness level in order to create an effective program. But what are some of the variables that you really need to focus on? First one is going to be frequency. So how often should that person train based on their goals and or needs? So a beginner definitely is looking to work out in that 2 to 3 times per week. They don't need to work out a ton because their body's not used to it, so they need to build that up slowly. Intermediate exerciser would be best with 3 to 4 sessions per week. Okay, that probably includes cardio and strength training. And then advanced, or mainly I think that's focusing on resistance training, my apologies. And then advanced should be 4 to 7 sessions a week, meaning that you can work out every day of the week. You just need to make sure that you are ensuring optimal recovery of the muscle groups that you're exercising. Okay, exercise selection is going to be the next variable, very important, because different exercises lead to different training results. Also, you want to focus on primary movements, the five primary movements associated with movement training, phase two. Definitely prioritize those for sure, because those are the major largest muscle groups. And then assisted exercises are secondary, meaning like your biceps, triceps, calves, forearms, certain stabilizers of the shoulder joint, different things like that. Those are going to be secondary muscle groups, and those should usually take a backseat depending on the client's goal. And then, as we move into slide number six, more variables for training is going to be volume. Volume is next, and volume is going to be important because you are going to be working with different levels of clients, and specifically, those levels of clients would need to adjust. You'd need to adjust the volume. You can't, with a brand new client, give them a ton of volume, as they might be overworked, oversore, and that would lead to, a negative effect of training, and or even just so much soreness that they don't want to work out with you because it was too hard. So, volume-wise, repetition. Volume equals sets times repetition. You can do it basically based off the number of repetitions you perform. Let's say you do four sets of 10 reps. That's 40 total reps. That's repetition volume. Okay. Some people do it. Yeah, I did X amount of reps. That's my volume today. Load volume adds the exercise weight times the reps times the sets. So let's say you did four sets of 10 exercise at 100 pounds. That's going to be 40 reps times 100, which is going to be 4,000 pounds lifted. So that's a load volume calculation. And you can definitely do it in different ways. I typically do the total number of work sets as my volume, meaning I want to usually stay under about 20 total work sets in one workout. Beyond that, and you get a little bit too much of a negative hormonal response, meaning too much increased cortisol. So around 20 total work sets is the optimal for the entire workout, meaning if I'm doing two body parts, that's 10 sets of each body part. If I'm doing three, that's about 6 to 7 sets per body part. If I'm doing four body parts, then we'll look at maybe 5 sets per body part. So that's my doing. Definitely ACE recommends a little bit different, but they say the volume based on goal. For general fitness, 1 to 2 sets, 8 to 15 reps, 30 to 90 second rests, and you want to ensure low soreness. Don't get overly sore, because that's not really for general fitness and maintenance. That's not really something that they need too much of. Muscular endurance is 2 to 3 sets, at least 12 reps or more. Definitely rest less than 30 seconds, because we're focusing on consistent quick work at 60 to 70% of one repetition maximum. So that's really, focusing on quick exercise, lot more sets, more reps, or sorry, less sets, or sorry, more total repetitions per set is the main focus for muscular endurance, and shorter rest periods. Muscular hypertrophy, 3 to 6 sets, so more sets per exercise at 6 to 12 reps. We definitely want you to have muscular hypertrophy memorized for the test. Once again, 3 to 6 sets, 6 to 12 reps at a 30 to 90 second rest period. With 70 to 80% of 1RM, so that's going to lead more towards the muscle gain spectrum of the workout or of the resistance training. And then muscular strength is going to be 2 to 6 sets, less than 6 reps, at 2 to 5 minutes rest, a little bit longer rest periods because you're focusing on strength where you want to have a full recovery period, at 80 to 90% of 1RM or more. I'd say all the way up to 100% of 1RM if you're doing one repetition maximums. And then for power, they want you to focus on a single effort lift of 3 to 5 sets, 1 to 2 reps, 2 to 5 minutes rest with 90% of 1RM. Basically a super maximal Olympic lift, deadlift, squat, bench press, things like that. Only 1 to 2 reps, go really, really heavy. Move that weight as fast as you can. And then multiple effort lifts is going to be 3 to 5 sets of 3 to 5 reps, 2 to 5 minute rest at 90% of 1RM2. So that's basically, you can go more, fast explosive work, or you can go heavy, heavy, heavy to emphasize increases in power. And then intensity is directly related to volume, but inversely, meaning training intensity is inverse to training volume. Typically, the higher intensities, the lower volume, and the lower the volume, the higher intensities. And let's say if you have high volume, the lower intensities you would use. if that all made sense. And then DOMS, what is DOMS? D-O-M-S. It stands for delayed onset muscle soreness. You'll refer to that basically as the muscle soreness that lasts, you know, in or peaks at the 48 to 72 hour mark, meaning the next day you're sore, but you're actually more sore the second and third day than you were. You don't want to get into DOMS too much with new clients, but for, you know, more advanced clients, that's definitely something that can be expected for as a soreness level. All right, variables for training continued. Tempo is next. So what is tempo? Tempo is the speed of one repetition and the length of time it takes to do one repetition. So a concentric muscle action should usually last around 1 to 3 seconds. The eccentric portion should last around 2 to 4 seconds, and that would create around a 6-second tempo, which is recommended for beginning exercises. When I say 6-second tempo, that's, we'll say, maybe 4 seconds eccentric with 2 seconds concentric. You can also add an isometric hold to that to create, you know, maybe a 1-second concentric, 2-second isometric, and then 3-second total eccentric. So slower repetitions are better for beginning exercisers. That's going to be something that we want you to know for sure. Slower repetitions are great for beginners, and then the faster movements are for people that are experienced lifting weights. You don't want the beginners going full really, really fast, as that promotes more power, strength, hypertrophy than it does coordination, stabilization elements. And then perform all exercises through a full range of motion. That's something really important. There are, you know, elements or certain exercises that can be performed in limited ranges of motion, especially if there is pain present. But for the most part, guys, always perform your exercises through a full range of motion, meaning squat with your butt to your heels all the way down, bench press, touch the bar to your chest press with a dumbbells. Make sure you touch the sides of your chest. Flies, feel a stretch in your chest before moving up. We'll say ranges of motion do matter. And for flexibility and maintaining appropriate length, tension, and relationships, you want to increase that total repetition range of motion at all times. Aim for that, I'd say, and especially with beginning clients, to increase flexibility and movement patterns in general. All right, rest. So rest is how long should you rest in between sets? Here's a suggested amount of rest. 30 seconds generates 50% of ATP regeneration, meaning that your recovery of your full effort is about 50% at 30 seconds. At 60 seconds, you get about 75% of ATP regeneration, and then pretty much full regeneration once you get beyond the 2-minute mark. Maybe 3 to 5 minutes would be 100%. So keep that in mind. That does matter, as you know, for endurance, you want to not have a full regeneration, and for strength, you want to have a full regeneration, and hypertrophy should be right there in the middle, so keep that in mind. But the optimal rest for muscle size and for resistance training in general is going to be 30 to 90 seconds, and we do want you to know that. Is that 30 to 90 seconds is the recommended total rest that is suggested by ACE. All right, moving on to slide number 8, as we talk about more principles of training. Specifically, now we're on to progression. So, progression. We want you to know the double progressive strength training protocol. Okay, what is the double progressive strength training protocol? It is where you first increase the reps, and then once the reps are, we'll say, maxed out at the adaptation that you prefer, meaning like for hypertrophy, they recommend about 12 total reps. If you can do more than 12 reps, then the second progression of the double progressive strength training protocol is to increase the weight by 5%. Okay, I want you to know that. First, increase the reps. And then once you max out the reps, increase the weight by 5%. That's what they suggest. And then also something very specific is that sets performed in 30 to 90 seconds are best for most goals, as it emphasizes the anaerobic energy system. Okay, we mentioned that in the previous slide, but yeah, repeating it again, 30 to 90 seconds is best. Okay, as that really puts the most stress on the muscle tissue, and specifically the anaerobic energy system, which is ATP and glycolysis energy systems for anaerobic, meaning without oxygen present. The aerobic system is when you get beyond the, 2 to 3 to 5 minutes of work. That's where aerobic energy system takes over. All right, specificity is next. It's another principle of training. And specificity directly refers to the, I'll read the bullet points first. Appropriate resistance to repetition protocols for each goal. The example they give is a sprinter versus a long distance runner. That specificity there is going to really emphasize type 2 muscle fibers, anaerobic energy system, to where the long distance runner is going to emphasize type 1 muscle fibers and the aerobic energy system. So the different types of goals require very specific types of training, and that's the principle of specificity, is work towards what the goal of the client is, and emphasize the energy system that is most important to the client goals. All right, I guess to give another example of specificity is, if a client wants to increase their ability to swim longer distances, you should work more on type 1 muscle fiber training, which is endurance-based resistance training, and that'll transfer better to swimming longer distances. Okay. All right, overload is next. Overload is basically just saying that the muscle has a current level of training that it is used to. It's used to doing it. It's totally fine. No adaptations will occur because it's been doing it forever. And overload basically states that you need to stimulate the muscle beyond what it is currently used to doing or currently prepared for. If you do not stress the muscle beyond what it's used to, there will be no adaptation that needs to take place according to the body. Okay, this usually requires progressively heavier training loads or progressively more volume. Okay, so that means increase the loads by 5% to facilitate more strength development. ACE really emphasizes that as you increase weight, only do it in increments of 5%, as that is safe. But overload, basically, for anything that you perform or any time that you get sore, basically means that you did something previous that stimulated overload. For instance, I'll go, we'll say, snowboarding over the weekend. If I haven't snowboarded all summer because there was no snow, that first time on the mountain, I'm usually pretty dang sore because I'm not used to that sort of work. And that is an example of overload. But then by the end of the winter, when I've snowboarded a bunch of times, I don't get sore from the same amount of volume because I've been snowboarding more and my muscles are now used to that work. Okay. You could apply that to any type of strength training, but if you are not stimulating overload, it typically means that you have plateaued. Keep that in mind. Meaning that if you ever don't get sore from doing the same workout, that means that your body is used to it, and that you need to switch up your training routine to continue to have overload. And that's not always true per se, but for the most part, if the soreness is a good indicator of if you've achieved overload or not. All right, as we move on to the next slide, slide number 9, the principles of training. Specifically, we're going over reversibility. Okay, so what is reversibility? We want you to know this, especially for the test. Reversibility just basically says that if no resistance training or activity is performed, the muscles will become smaller and weaker. Okay, this is basically what happens. Let's say you go to the gym for a year or two, and then all of a sudden you take a break for a year. Your muscles in that year will grow smaller and weaker. And this is what happens typically as you age. People stop going to the gym as much or being as active, and adults on average lose 3 pounds of muscle every 6 years. And I'd say if you stop exercising, it may even your muscle might even grow less than that. Or sorry, you might lose even more muscle. That's what ACE suggests, is adults on average lose 3 pounds every 6 years, or half a pound a year. And you'll lose strength gains at half the rate that the strength was gained. So let's say you put on 2 pounds of muscle in a 10-week period. It would take you 20 weeks to lose that same 2 pounds. So losing strength gains happens at half the rate that it was gained. All right, diminishing returns is also important to know, which is basically that if you have a very experienced exerciser, their results that they can achieve are going to come a lot slower than someone that's brand new to exercising. And that's basically when a person nears their genetic potential, the results are slowed down significantly, meaning that there is a point at which someone can no longer increase certain parameters of fitness, and that's because that it's at their genetic potential. They personally cannot grow better. A lot of times in the fitness industry, you'll have people reach their genetic potential and still want better and more results, and then they look towards other things to assist them with progressing, whether they be legal or illegal. But certain supplements, can assist. But you're basically experiencing slower strength gains when you reach your genetic potential. And that's also true for endurance capabilities. This is why it's been almost impossible. Well, sorry, as of now, it is still impossible for a human to run a under 2 hour marathon. I think that the fastest marathon ever is like 2 hours and 2 minutes. But there is so far no person on earth that has the genetic potential to run a marathon 26.2 miles in under 2 hours. Even though they've been coming as close as possible, no one's done it yet. That means all of the human race's genetic potential has not been able to achieve that. But every individual has their own genetic potential, meaning if I trained my hardest for 10 years straight, I probably couldn't even run a 2.5 hour marathon. So maybe. I've never tried, but just keep that in mind, that every individual person is different, and their results will slow as they reach that genetic potential. That's diminishing returns. So what do you need to do? You need to change your training protocols to always have proper periodization to enhance the ability to push through that, but it's typically very tough. And then also you want to introduce new exercises with a new neuromuscular response to increase motor unit activation for continued strength gains. That's what ACE recommends, is that if a certain program, kind of you start to slow down on the results, change up the program, and then change up the exercises to utilize periodization and different motor unit responses and activations. All right, so speaking of that, that's a perfect transition to the next topic, which is going to be periodization. What is periodization? Periodization is the ability or the emphasis on changing up your exercise program every so often to ensure that consistent results occur. Okay, periodization is done in macro, meso, and micro cycles. A macro cycle is typically about 6 to 12 months of training. A mesocycle is maybe smaller cycles, like 1 month or so. And a microcycle is typically smaller pieces, like a 1 to 2 week sort of microcycle. Okay. There's two different types of periodization that ACE talks about. Linear periodization is basically slowly progressing from low intensities to higher intensities, or higher volumes to lower volumes. Basically adding weight slowly, we'll say, not lifting too heavy. And then it is a consistent training protocol, meaning that you basically slowly add weight as the person becomes more experienced, we'll say. And then undulating periodization is probably, I'd say, a little bit for more advanced clients. And it basically varies the intensity and volume during each workout program, meaning that some days and or workouts or exercises you'll lift heavy on. At the same time, you will also be lifting light on other exercises. So it's basically creating multiple adaptations at once, we'll say, with undulating periodization. And various training protocols during the microcycles, in addition to changing the variables after each microcycle. So more or less, you're always changing your workouts and you aren't going in a progressive, slowly increasing in load pattern. All right, so moving on to slide number 11, as we talk about program design in the ACE-IFT model, they recommend the acute variables, and they suggest the acute variables they recommend are in the acronym FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, which is frequency, intensity, repetitions, sets, and type. Okay, so phase one for FIRST focuses on promoting proximal stability within the lumbar spine, and then more towards distal mobility of the extremities. Okay, that's the main emphasis on FIRST. And they utilize a variety of flexibility techniques. So the first for movement training emphasizes, this is for phase two, the first for movement training emphasizes the five primary movements at 2 to 3 sessions per week, low intensity, 10 to 20 reps, and at least one set. It's all dependent on the client's movement efficiency. So you want to keep in mind that you have a stable positioning, ground-based standing, multiplanar movements, and unsupported postures. So all of that does matter as far as the types of exercises and how you choose the stabilization elements of it. Also, you want to focus on closed chain for the lower body. That's the most relevant to athletics. That's the most relevant to the way humans work. And then open chain for the upper body, because that's more often how the human movement occurs. Once again, closed chain is where your feet are, or your body is moving around the resistance. And the open chain is where the resistance is moving, like when you push something away from you and the object moves, that's open chain. All right, and then also to keep in mind that newcomers to resistance training typically increase strength faster as the motor learning effect enhances the nervous system firing, okay? Meaning that, and we want you to know this for the test, is that new exercisers will increase strength very, very quickly. And that's because the nervous system adapts extremely fast to the training adaptations. If that made sense. Or to the training effect, I should say. Training stimulus. There you go. That's what I was looking for. The nervous system adapts very quickly to the training stimulus compared to the muscular system is a little bit slower to adapt. So you'll gain a ton of strength quickly as a new exerciser, and that's due to the motor recruitment of the nervous system and the nervous system firing frequency. Keep that in mind. All right, as we move over to slide number 12, program design and the ACE-IFT model continued. So the first for muscular endurance is going to be 3 sessions per week. Also, keep in mind that if you cannot do the same amount of reps on the second and third workout, then the frequency is dropped to 2 times per week. That's if you're overly sore, more or less, and the progress slows. You have to do 12, or recommended is 12 to 16 controlled reps. That's about 6 seconds per rep at the tempo. At 60 to 70% of 1RM within 75 to 100 seconds. You want to keep the length of time or the length of each set around 75 to 100 seconds. And that's 12 times 6 or 16 times 6 is their recommendation. I'd say around that 75 to 90 seconds would be best. 2 to 3 sets with less than 60 seconds rest and an emphasis on the 5 basic movement patterns with exercise selection. So your squat, your bench press, your overhead press, your pull-ups, your deadlifts, and I'm missing the row. I think that was it. Good. All right, and then first for strength. So 72 hours between workouts using the same muscle group. So make sure there's adequate recovery in between the 2 workouts for strength. 1 to 6 reps is recommended at 80 to 90% of 1RM, one repetition maximum. 70 to 90% for initial stages of strength training, meaning that if you have a newer client, you don't want to go too heavy right away, so maybe that 70% might be more appropriate to create the adaptation. And then typically 3 to 4 sets with emphasis on the 5 basic movement patterns and progressing. And then one specific thing as far as strength goes, when we think about a strength training circuit or a strength circuit training program, progression matters. Specifically, we want you to understand that the double progression protocol is what you should focus on. But first, increase the number of circuits. And then secondly, increase the load. So when someone can complete circuits easily, add another circuit. And then once you add another circuit, then you can add load. Okay, that is to enhance the strength training for circuit training. Strength, circuit training. Circuit, strength training. There you go. All right, moving on to slide number 13. As we talk about the first for hypertrophy. So the first for hypertrophy, 72 hours of recovery is also recommended for that same muscle group. 6 to 12 reps at 70 to 80% of 1RM at 50 to 70 second rest, so a little bit slower on the rest. The or a little bit shorter on the rest is what I meant, with 3 to 6 sets. So those are the hypertrophy recommendations, guys. So if you're listening to this right now and you're still a little bit confused as far as, you know, like, what does this even mean, all these acute variables thrown at me? Basically, what it means is that if you want to gain muscle, you should program your exercises that you choose with in between 6 to 12 reps at a medium to heavier weight, 70 to 80% of 1 RM, and then your rest period should be 50 to 70 seconds, and you should program 3 to 6 sets. Okay, so of each exercise that you do, you should do 3 to 6 sets of it at 6 to 12 reps at that weight with a shortish rest period. Okay, so to give you an example, I'm doing bench press today. I'm going to do 6 reps of. I'm going to do three, or we'll do 4 sets of 6 reps at 185 pounds with, and then keep my rest periods at 50 to 70 seconds. Okay, I typically like to throw in tempo there too, and create a controlled tempo, like we'll say a 4 second total tempo. But yeah, that's basically what these programming, the first for program design really means, is that you're utilizing those acute variables to create a fitness program. So let's say you are interested in gaining muscle, use those right now, create a program for yourself, do it at the gym, make sure you hit all the primary movements and even the accessory movements that you want to improve, like if you want bigger arms, do some biceps, triceps sort of stuff too. All right, then the advanced approaches for hypertrophy, you can do things like supersets, which is basically alternating exercise for opposing muscle groups. So if you do a bench press, superset it with a row maybe. And then compound sets is going to be 2 or more exercises for the same muscle group in succession. So that's basically going to be the a bench press followed by push-ups and then followed by a chest fly. That is a compound set. Then breakdown training, which is also called a drop set. You'll hear both in the industry, but a drop set is a little bit more preferred. That's why I put it in parentheses. But it's basically training to fatigue, meaning you fail, and then you reduce the weight and continue to do more reps. And then you continue until you have complete failure and you can no longer lift. That's great, 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 great for hypertrophy. Really stresses the muscle fiber. And I've done actually just finished up a program like this and did see some great muscular hypertrophy improvements. So, but that it really is only for advanced lifters. If you're brand new, I would not recommend that. Assisted training, train to fatigue, then have someone assist you on the lifting phase. This is called like eccentric training, or eccentric emphasis training. Go heavier than you can actually lift and then have someone assist you on the down phase. Once again, that's an advanced training technique. All right, moving on to slide number 14, improving power. So what can you do to improve power? Plyometrics is typically recommended. That's quick, powerful movements involving the stretch shortening cycle in which the muscle spindles create an extra stretch, or the muscle spindles react to the stretch and contract the muscle to effectively propel you forward at a more powerful rate. The amortization phase is basically the time in between the eccentric and concentric contractions. For plyometric training, make sure the amortization phase is as short as possible. There is no isometric training phase in plyometrics. That is actually replaced with the amortization phase, which is just the changing from eccentric to concentric. Make sure that's short. As far as the stretch shortening cycle goes, we're going to talk about muscle spindles a little bit more. Muscle spindles are going to sense the differences in the rate and magnitude of the stretch on a muscle. Okay, meaning that if your muscle is loaded heavily and then stretched, it is definitely going to sense that and tell you to contract. And what they do is they cause a muscle to concentrically contract when a quick stretch is detected. So basically, what happens is that when you land on a explosive, or when you land coming off of a jump, your muscles stretch very quickly, which then tells the muscle spindle to contract to prevent injury. But then also what that does is it propels you up into the next jump even higher typically. Okay. Youth training, just to keep in mind for program design in the ACE-IFT model, resistance training is a key component of youth training. It is basically a wives' tale in the sense that youth should not do resistance training. No, it will not stunt a kid's growth. That is one wives' tale that I have heard. But you should do resistance training for kids. Just make sure that it's more emphasis on coordination, skill development, and body weight training, I'd say would be the best type. But you can definitely do weights as well. Older adults, you want to avoid holding their breath or something called the Valsalva maneuver. That could increase their blood pressure too high. And that also includes avoid holding isometric contractions too, as that can increase blood pressure. So keep that in mind. All right, we're going to talk about equipment pretty quickly here. There's specialized machines regarding equipment that can assist with strength training. Chest press machine, the hammer strength machines, life fitness machines, cable machines, different things like that can really assist a client with specific or targeting specific body parts. There's also cables. Okay, cables are great, a little bit great for endurance, a little less for strength because they are a little bit unstable. Free weights. I want to point out that free weights are probably going to be your best tool as a personal trainer. And the reason why is because they offer a ton of variety to the movements that can be performed. Okay. Basically, keep that in mind. That's the real reason why free weights are going to be best, more or less, is because they offer a variety of potential movements. What are free weights classified as, or what are some examples of free weights? You have things like barbells, dumbbells, those are the main ones. Then you have kettlebells, medicine balls, and other loaded objects that, sandbags, what else? Kegs for strength training, Atlas stones. Lots of different tools that are used in different varietals of exercise, but yeah. All right, elastic resistance such as band training is also available, and body weight training for equipment. Yeah, using your own body weight to emphasize resistance training is also possible. All right, next we have nutrition and supplements. Just to kind of briefly go over this, there's definitely a lot of information out there, and probably one of the biggest industries in all of fitness is not even fitness, it's actually the supplement industry associated with fitness. And multi billion dollar industry, not a lot of regulation, meaning supplement company doesn't need to prove that their stuff works. They can just kind of claim it and then say that the FDA has not approved or confirmed these results. So the first one that we talk about is going to be protein and amino acid supplements. Really, guys, this is one of the biggest elements of the fitness industry. It's like, oh, what kind of protein powder do you recommend? I get that question all the time. This is more my opinion. That's why I threw it in there. But there's it's actually proven that there's no research that suggests that protein supplements such as like whey protein work better than getting it from whole foods from your diet. Like, there's no research that says, oh, the protein supplement I took, the whey protein supplement that I took is better than this chicken that I'm gonna eat. There's no research that proves that. Both of them have the full amino acid profile, or contain all essential amino acids. There is some research that does say specific amino acids can benefit something like prevent catabolism, like branched chain amino acids, glutamine, that can really assist in preventing muscle breakdown during injury and or after surgeries. There's definitely a research that proves that. But if you get those BCAAs from chicken and not from a supplement, is there any proof that one works better than the other? Probably not. So just keep in mind that protein supplements are not necessary. Unless you aren't getting protein from your diet, then you can look to a supplement, such as certain diets don't have that much protein, and you can add supplements to increase your total protein intake. All right, but yeah, guys, my suggestion around all nutrition supplements, I have a whole lecture on this. Actually, it's for free on our website. Just type in the search column, foods in nature, that's right above you, the little search bar, type in foods in nature, and there's a whole lecture that you can kind of understand a little bit more my views on nutrition. But just basically eat whole foods, one ingredient is typically best, or when you look at the ingredients list and it has like 1,000 things, choose the foods with one ingredient, like what's in broccoli, oh, broccoli, what's in a banana, oh, a banana, what's in chicken, oh, chicken, okay. what's in a Nutri-Grain bar, 80 ingredients that you probably can't even list. Okay, so keep that in mind. Avoid processed foods is my simple tip. All right, yeah, other supplements, beta-alanine definitely has been shown to enhance athletic performance, specifically as a lactic acid buffer. Caffeine as well can improve mindset for exercise and reduce the feeling of fatigue. Creatine, 100%, it does work. There's studies to prove it. It is effective in building muscle mass and increases muscle stores, which allows for higher volumes of training. We go over that in the audio lecture a little bit more, so I'll leave that for down there. Anemia, iron is iron deficiency. Certain doctors will recommend that you get on an iron supplement if you are anemic. And then vitamin B12, always make sure that you have enough of that, especially if you're on a vegan or a vegetarian diet. And then riboflavin is also a B vitamin, which is for energy production. Yeah, good stuff there. All right, and moving to our final slide, slide number 17, as we continue with nutrition and supplements, vitamin D is essential for calcium absorption, bone growth, and mineralization. Where do you get vitamin D from? Hopefully you kind of know this, but you get vitamin D from the sun. Okay, that's where you would get it in nature. Also, certain fatty fishes can have a decent amount of vitamin D. Some dairy products do. Usually they're fortified with it, but yeah, keep that in mind. But yeah, guys, get a little bit of sunlight. If you're above 40 degrees of latitude in the wintertime, you should definitely be on a vitamin D supplement. Pretty much any area that in which you don't get sunlight very often, especially in the winter, be on a vitamin D supplement. Steroids, keep in mind that steroids are illegal and also can have negative side effects. A lot of this talk about steroids is really about how abuse of steroids creates all of these negative side effects. If you talk to a doctor, they can appropriately prescribe males certain steroids that can increase their we'll say quality of life, especially as males age, even females as well. But keep that in mind that anything that's negative around steroids is typically from abuse of these steroids. So small amounts can assist people, and I wish there was more research that showed that. But since it is illegal, it's not very common that you can do a study on an illegal drug, we'll say. So, but yeah, anabolic side effects are definitely there. Anabolic side effects meaning increased growth in muscle fibers, increased growth in all tissues of the body, especially with growth hormone. But yeah, they say high blood pressure, gynecomastia, meaning enlarging in breast tissue, decreased testicle size. That's because the testicles are where testosterone is typically produced. Increases testosterone, which can lead to facial hair growth, deepening of voice in women. And then there's also precursors to testosterone, which is something like androstenedione. Fun word to say for sure, but that can also decrease HDL levels, increase risk of cardiovascular disease, also increase risk of prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer, and then can increase baldness and gynecomastia as well. So, all right, guys, that is going to be it for the Chapter 10 PowerPoint. Definitely complete all the below, including the audio lectures, the assignments, and the quiz. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing you down below in the audio lectures. And, yeah, cheers. Have a good one. Bye.